This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
Macca and Mark Hawthorne here. Next person we're going to speak to is Scott Ludlam. Scott is a former Greens senator. He also is writer for The Guardian and also for your old organisation, Fairfax, which is now called, what's it called now?
Nine Publishing.
Nine Publishing. Okay. So, there you go. So, Scott Ludlam, and he's writing a new book about activism, and we're just trying to get him on the phone. Activism is very important in the media world too, isn't it, Mark?
Absolutely. And it's interesting. I mean, obviously activism from a news perspective generates a great deal of news. It's dominated the first half an hour of the show, talking about what's happening in Hong Kong. But it'll be interesting to speak to Scott. We've got some scribbling happening here from our team. But, you know, it's at the core. And in fact, if you look at a lot of the major news stories in Australia right now, ranging from Adani to various other issues.
I think he'd like to write a book. I don't think he's written one yet, but he wants to talk about the Writers' Festival and the role that, writers play in society and personally as activists. Good morning, Scott. Sorry about that. How are you going?
I'm well. How are you?
Look, I can't complain. I can't complain other than that I've got too many notes on in front of me. You know, being an activist can be pretty costly and pretty taxing. Not just, I suppose, in terms of career and family and, you know, emotional and mental health. You know, you're one of the people that's gone into battle. Nick Hollis, who was actually on the show last week, and yourself and a whole lot of other people. I'm interested, how do you survive as an activist? Because there's an event, I think it's on Sunday the 1st of September at the Capitol, 11:30, called Labour of Love. Tell us about it.
Well, it's part of the incredible Melbourne Writers' Festival program that Marie Carty's put together. It's a very rich program. And, yeah, you're right, the event that I'm participating in is called Labour of Love, and it's with some remarkable people who will be sharing their experiences about how to kind of look after yourself and each other if you're doing political work or activism or campaigning, which, as you say, can be costly. It can be very rewarding as well. But I think these folk will have some really interesting ideas about how they take care of themselves in the middle of that.
Is there any, post-politics, Scott, I suppose there's I wouldn't say perhaps a calm has come over your life, but it's a very different life. It's a very different life, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, there's nothing that can quite replace working in that environment. I loved it. I wouldn't quite say I loved every minute of it. I loved most minutes of it. But, yeah, it's a one-of-a-kind gig. I think it's good not to stick around in it for too long, but there's nothing that can quite replace working in that environment, in that context, and with those remarkable people.
So I suppose one thing that activists, you know, the challenge that it places on your life, and you know, you're an activist on one side of the spectrum, and with particular issues, and there are other people that are activists on the other side of that. But you all share, you know, this same, I use the term burden, but the same burden of how do you cope with it? How does it impact on your life? You know, emotionally, your mental health, on your relationships with people.
I think it's different for everybody. And my experience is, like, I don't have it nearly as tough as some others. I think it's much harder on women. It's much harder for colour. It's harder on Aboriginal people. And, you know, doing political advocacy, putting your head above the parapet, putting your name to stuff, can be immensely rewarding, but it also does come with cost. But I'm aware for somebody like me, with just multiple overlapping privileges of being white, middle class, my heterosexual guy, I would occasionally retweet some of my female colleagues and would then realise that they were being exposed to an entirely different degree of of hate, actually, and that, that the costs were wearing much more heavily on them than they were on me.
Scott, I want to talk to you. Obviously, you're coming to Melbourne for the Writers' Festival, and speaking about activism, you've been quite involved in activism throughout your career. I think you're quite involved in some of the anti-uranium mining campaigns of 15, 20 years ago. Can you talk about your experience there and what you learned?
I had a really fortunate experience. I got, as you say, I got involved in anti-nuclear work in the late 1990s around the time of the Jabiluka campaign. So this is John Howard's plan for 25 uranium mines around the country. And the very first one was to be on Mirar Country in Kakadu National Park in the Northern Territory. And I was fortunate. I had good teachers. I had amazing mentors. I was involved in a campaign that was led by strong Aboriginal women that was a real flashpoint, similar to the way the Adani campaign is shaping up now. And for me, it carried me through a number of years of incredible gifts. Like, you're working with remarkable people. I was learning heaps. My life had meaning for the first time in as long as I could remember. And, you know, it's incredible to be a part of. And then, of course, they won. There's no uranium mine at Jabiluka today because of that campaign and because of the leadership of the Aboriginal women. Feeling that you have even a small part, that you played even a small part in something like that, stays with you for the rest of your life.
And it does. And you know, I think of your number of your colleagues that are still in the Senate, and you know, it's a tough gig. So when the Writers' Festival is doing this, what do you know? What sort of reaction do you think you might get, or do you hope to get from the audience? Because it's quite a, I wouldn't say for me it makes a lot of sense, but it's quite a different sort of event to be doing.
It is, yeah, it is. But I mean, it's a. I am expecting that it's likely to be a fairly warm room. Melbourne's quite a political town. People who are coming to Writers' Festival aren't likely to be hostile to the idea of participating in your community. For me, I mean, partly I said yes because it gives you a front row seat to listen to these other exceptional people and kind of share those experiences. So I think it's going to be a great session, and I expect we'll probably hear from people in the audience as well who will have their own experiences to share.
And Scott, if I may, we've talked about it with a couple of folk. Hong Kong. They're not just a small handful of activists. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of activists. It must you must be watching that with a great deal of interest. And you know, do you have fears how this might turn out?
I'm watching the demonstration. I think a lot of people are. There are incredible uprisings happening at the moment across Europe, in Paris in particular, in Russia, and in Hong Kong. And they've got a substantial fraction of the whole city-state's population out on the streets at the moment, demanding greater autonomy and freedom from the influence of the mainland, which they're obviously very concerned about. And we've seen a very sharp increase in police violence, even in the last week or 10 days or so, which I think augurs very badly. That's the kind of thing where diplomatic intervention by governments, by friendly governments such as the Australian government, can carry a long way. And I would be very... I think now is the time for the Australian government to step in and make it very clear that diplomatically we don't tolerate violence against unarmed peaceful demonstrators in Hong Kong or anywhere.
Well, the benchmark for that was Bob Hawke when he spoke out about Tiananmen Square.
That's right. There were a lot of mainland Chinese students who were studying in Australia at the time, and I think that was a very popular move. I don't know whether he felt like he was taking a political risk at the time. I think it was probably pretty unpopular with the Chinese authorities. But sometimes you have to take a diplomatic hit in order to do what is right. And I think it's a long time, actually, since we've seen Australian governments show that kind of resolve.
To bring it back to home, Scott, there's a lot of activism in Australia at the moment. There's a lot of, you know, important issues that people are protesting. For a successful campaign, what's your views on that campaign having to work within the framework of the law? I mean, to some activists, that's quite Machiavellian, the ends justify the means. What are your thoughts there? Do successful campaigns still need to operate within the framework of the law?
Look, I think that's a question that people have been puzzling over right throughout history. At the moment, it's lawful for the Australian government to license coal mining companies to destroy the Great Barrier Reef, to throw huge numbers of people living in coastal settlements, to throw our farmers into drought, to throw people into bushfire risk. It's entirely lawful for the government to allow the Adani mine to go ahead, for example. And on the other hand, you see the company that violates its license condition over and over again, given a slap on the wrist. I think people understand that the law is bent and that the law, in some respect, is being written by the coal companies themselves, by the lobbyists who are very deeply embedded inside the Prime Minister's office. Yeah. And so if what you're getting to should we tolerate people stopping traffic, for example, the kind of actions that Extinction Rebellion are winding up, or the direct actions that we're already seeing on site at the Adani site, those sort of actions where people in good conscience, non-violently and very openly will press pass, will hold up traffic, will refuse to leave when they're asked to by police, and then they will cop the consequences. That's how environmental and social justice campaigns have been won within democracies down through history. It's how we won at Jabiluka. I was arrested at Jabiluka. I was arrested at a forest blockade in the southwest of WA. And in a small way, those actions help raise the stakes for the state. There are entirely new national parks in the southwest of WA now that owe their existence to people who are willing to break the law peacefully. And there's no question in my mind that we're going to see a surge of that kind of action as the consequences of climate change start to overtake it.
Thank you, Scott. We wish you luck. It's Sunday the 1st of September, 11:30 a.m. It's called Labour of Love at the Capitol. Thanks for your time this morning, and I hope it's a great event for you, and there's lots of audience engagement.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.